Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Good to see everybody here. As Ajahn Nisibo mentioned last week, he gave a talk on asubha. So that is the recollection or meditation, paying attention to the unbeautiful parts of the body. And this is a really helpful recollection when lust or some kind of deep craving arises, being able to see that which is not beautiful about something, specifically that which is not beautiful about the body. And in the talk, Ajahn Nisibo mentioned imagining hair in soup and flaky dead skin and crushing bones in your mind and
oily
skin, and imagining peeling off someone else's eyelids. So I think you can virtually rely on that if we give a talk where we encourage you to imagine peeling off someone's eyelids, then within 3 to 5 weeks, we'll give a talk on loving kindness just to balance things out. So, so we did that chant on loving kindness, and I'd actually love it if we could chant the very next page. So on page 43, this is the suffusion of the divine abidings. And these are the two main ways that people are taught in America to practice loving kindness, either with the phrases, may I abide in well-being and freedom from affliction, freedom from hostility. We've got 5 or 6 phrases that you memorize and you kind of say that in your mind, and that's one way. And then we've got this way here, which is a more pervading sense of metta. And we'll just do the first paragraph, the one on loving kindness. So, now let us make the 4 boundless qualities shine forth. I will abide pervading 1/4 with a heart imbued with loving kindness. Likewise the 2nd, likewise the 3rd, likewise the 4th. So above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself, I will abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. So it's got a different flavor to it. And today I'd really like to go in depth into this particular pericope. So this is a fancy word. I only learned it 2 years ago. You find it in scriptural study. It is a stock phrase. So the Pali Canon, the main scriptures of Theravada Buddhism, are filled with these pericopes, these stock phrases where the Buddha will say something here, and it's like a puzzle piece, and he uses the puzzle piece in this puzzle, in this discourse, and then he uses it in a different collection, and it allows for ease of memory. It's not that the Buddha was totally fixated on always being completely spontaneous. He could have these formulas, which are great for memory, and when you're coming to meditate, it can be quite helpful to have these specific phrases which you say in your mind. Some people talk about metta or the whole Dhamma as being a science. So you found this kind of language a lot in the 1960s, 1970s, especially when Theravada Buddhism was coming to the West, coming to America, and you had teachers in Sri Lanka or India kind of translating these concepts for the West and making them more accessible for a Western mind, and it seemed there was a thought, which is probably true, that framing things in this scientific framework will make them, you know, we're not pushing a religion, this is just science. So you get a very clear formula like this: I will abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will. You memorize the sayings, and you do it with yourself, and then you're taught to do it with someone, say these thoughts with regards to someone who you love and who it's easy to have these thoughts with. May they abide in well-being and freedom from affliction and freedom from hostility and freedom from ill will. And somebody who you're neutral about, like the person at the grocery store who you don't know very well, and then maybe even an enemy, or you can do it your family and your community and your city and your state. And it's very systematic in this way, very scientific. But metta and the whole Dhamma really is also, it's an art. It's an art as well as being a science, and knowing what you need at any particular time. Sometimes you might need to lean into the specific formulas, memorizing these things and bringing them up. It's a very specific method. It's not woolly. It's very clear and specific. And sometimes you just might need to chillax and go to the beach with your meditation and open things up and realize that meditation can be an art as well. So before going into the specifics of this particular pericope, really going into each of the words, and we will be referring to the Pali, and this is a very traditional way of analyzing or speaking about or thinking about living a sutta, is just this way. You take a discourse that the Buddha gave or a short passage, and then you elaborate on it. There's cases in the Pali Canon. There's four different discourses about one excellent night in the middle-length discourses, which are all three different monks giving their own takes on one short passage, short poem by the Buddha. And then traditional exegetes, commentators, would do the same thing. You take a passage, and then you define each word, and you go back and forth like this. So before doing that, which isn't very appealing for some people, to be so somewhat rigid, we'll do a little bit of a psychological test. And don't be afraid, we won't sell your information to Google. But here it is, and this can work either way, whether up or down. So looking at these two shapes, which one is Boba and which one is Kiki? Which one is Boba and which one is Kiki? Okay? So, how do I ask this? Which one, who thinks that this one is Boba? Show of hands. Okay? And who thinks that this one is Boba? Okay. No wrong answers. No wrong answers. Totally cool. This one could be Boba. But this test was first done. It's actually got a name. It's called the Boba-Kiki effect. B-O-U-B-A-K-I-K-I effect. And you can read about it on Wikipedia. You can read about the original studies. The original study is done in 1920s, and then you had a researcher in 1921 who came up with the particular names. Ramachandran was the researcher's name, and done with both American college students and Tamil speakers in India. And 95 to 97% of people did the same as 97% of you, which was this guy's Boba, the kind of bubbly, Boba tea-looking, Boba Fett-looking, blobby one over here. And this one is Kiki. And no offense, I think I did know somebody named Kiki once. And there's nothing against Kiki. But it does point, and this effect has been, it's been tested multiple times. It works with people who are blind, have been blind since birth. It shows the same effect, people feeling the different shapes. They say that the pointy one is Kiki, generally, and the round one is Boba. And with children, even age two, show the same effects. So, and cross-culturally. So it's been reduplicated and done many times in different settings. And it points to something called ideasthesia, or sound symbolism, that there is some kind of deep relationship to sounds or ideas and shapes and different angularity or lack of it. And I bring it up here because I'd like to ask all of us, what shape is your metta? What shape is your metta? And yeah, the way that I'm going to be analyzing this discourse might seem a little bit kiki. You know, it's not super spontaneous. It's not totally off the cuff. We keep referring back to the sutta again and again and going back. And yeah, that's one way of analyzing things. And it's good to be able to have the flexibility to appreciate or at least hear both sides of things. I was listening to I've got a program which will read text to me off of a screen, and I was listening to a book by Tsokni Rinpoche. He's written a book called Carefree Dignity, which is so good. So good, everybody. I highly recommend that. Just the words are great, just the title. But this passage, I was listening to it, and there must have been something with the font, but every time the computer voice would come to, he would come to a particular part, and he would talk about spontaneous wisdom, spontaneous insight. And I was like, what is spontaneous insight, spontaneous wisdom? And obviously, it was spontaneous. It was spontaneous, and but I just love that word, spontaneous. Like it's a combination of spontaneity and being cantankerous or being just edgy. You just don't like certain things, and you definitely encounter this in a monastery in America, where people are coming from a Zen background, where there's very little formal instruction and extreme emphasis on spontaneity, on just asking somebody what an orange is, versus Theravada, which is very much the system of the elders. It's got a lot of traditional aspects to it. So you see this spontaneousness where you get kind of edgy and cantankerous about spontaneity, and you always want everything to be spontaneous. But at risk of triggering those people, just go into some of this in the Pali and in the English, because the English has a lot of insights, and it's the way that many people have been taught and learned how to meditate. But when you look back at the Pali, it really suggests other ways, other very profound ways, shifts of practicing metta. So just the very first clause, I will abide pervading one quarter with a heart imbued with loving kindness. So to start off with, it's good to note that in the Pali, the first word is not I. The first word is metta. And actually in the Pali, there is no I. There is no I in the Pali. Sometimes there's an I. There are pronouns in Pali. But here, the verb contains the pronoun. And here, it's not even a first-person pronoun. It's a third-person pronoun. So it would be better translated as one abides pervading one quarter. So, and what is that one? Is that, on one level, it just undercuts the I of the whole process. It's so easy to get into this I-ing, this me-ing of my metta. It's like Cyclops metta, like Cyclops, like from the X-Men, not from the Odyssey. But you're just like shooting the laser beams of just metta, boom, with a kind face. But the Pali, there's no I, and the pronoun doesn't even come first. So we foreground, this is metta doing metta. So I will abide pervading one quarter. Something else here is the ordering of the verbs here. I will abide pervading. So you could take this, and I certainly have, is that this is what I'm supposed to do with metta. It's like you're in your fallout shelter after the apocalypse, and you've got your flashlight, your crank flashlight, and your crank radio. And it's like I'm constantly abiding, pervading. I'm like constantly having to crank up my metta. It's like I'm abiding while having to keep on doing it. Whereas the Pali, the verbs are ordered the other way around. So it is one having pervaded, one abides. So having pervaded, one abides. And that's fascinating. That's very different. It's very different. It's very different because you're dwelling in the abiding. You're not dwelling in the cranking. You're not dwelling in the cranking out and the producing of all this love and just saying, okay. I had one very good monk friend. He's still a monk. He used to be a soldier, and his way of he had a lot of samadhi, a lot of concentration, and he could just sit down for hours and just sit like a rock. He actually got a hernia, appendicitis. He was sitting meditation, his appendix broke, and he just kept sitting with it and ended up having to go to the hospital. Not recommending that, but he had good samadhi, very good concentration. It's good to also have awareness of our appendices. But his way of practicing metta, he described it to me one time. It's like his way, he would just go through. So living in a monastery, basically most of the time we just see all the other monks. That's the main people who we see. And it's very easy. The ordering of us monks, we just go by when we ordained. So there's a line and it's just seniority. So he would go down in his imagination the line of the monks. So the abbot, you're like in his mind, metta. Yeah. And the vice abbot, metta. And the next abbot, metta. And you just go down the line, like, meta, meta, meta. And then some monk who he didn't really like would come up, and he'd be like, don't really like that guy. Doesn't matter. Meta, meta, don't like that. Meta, doesn't matter. Meta. And he was just, like a meta, like shotgun. And that's, we don't have to do that. You know, it's having pervaded a gerund. So it's almost, it's a present past tense. So having pervaded one, in one step, we will, as you see here, it says one quarter, the second quarter, the third quarter, the fourth quarter. But you can just pop the bubble from the beginning. Having pervaded, just done. The mind is already expansive from the beginning. Consciousness already knows from the beginning. There's a very useful word in English. It's called sensorium. So this is the sum total of all of our senses. So the sensorium includes all of the light data, all the visual data that we're getting from the outside world. It includes all the sounds that we're hearing near and far. It includes all the odors and all the tastes and all the touches that we're taking in, all the feelings of the body and everything that's coming up in the mind. This is the sensorium. And even if we don't know it, we're still feeling the whole body. If someone were to come up to some part of my body that I'm not actively paying attention to right now and poke me in that part of the body, I would know it, like right away. Don't do it. But yeah, the mind, consciousness is, there is this immediacy of spacious, three-dimensional, sensorium awareness. And so you can pervade all quarters from the very beginning. You can just let down all the curtains in every direction from the beginning. So that's having pervaded. The next line, or the next word in the Pali is sahagatena. So this is paired. It's literally, it's a compound word, which you find a lot in the Pali, with metta, with loving kindness. Or loving friendliness. The word metta is usually translated as loving kindness. Excuse me. This started being used because there were early translators into English from the Pali in the late 1800s who were very familiar. They were translating in a very Baroque, very Victorian way with lots of vows and shouts. And they were very familiar with the King James Bible. And this word, loving kindness, which is not a word you find outside of Buddhist circles in America, is found like 50 or 70 times in Ecclesiastes or Psalms. So it's in the King James Bible a lot, hyphenated metta, or loving kindness. But you can also translate it loving friendliness. You can just translate it love, if that's not triggering for you. I think it's the... I'm not sure Greek or Latin, but agape is the same concept from the biblical concept of just loving kindness towards all beings right now. So however you translate it, this haggata is right up next to. It's the same word as metta. And we translate it here is with a heart imbued. Whereas sahagata, it literally means like going with or walking with. So it's like you can imagine just walking, you know, hand in hands with loving kindness, with your heart, with some friendliness. It's just super chill, and nobody's going to make fun of you for holding hands with your good friend, loving kindness, and just a comfortable dwelling, just walking along with metta, the mind, the chetas, can be translated as, in some of these translated chanting books, it's heart, sometimes it's mind. It's honestly, at a monastery, you'll hear it both ways, and I often forget which one it is in the book, because it can be translated as both heart and mind. And oftentimes that heart center, the physical heart center, is associated more with this emotional center and with this softness and with this in-touchness with the soft side of our beings. So the heart is great. The Pali word, sometimes the Abhidhamma Buddhist philosophy will actually say, where does the mind abide? And what they say is the Hridaya Vatu, the Hridaya Vatu, the base of the physical heart. And I don't think that's backed up in other suttas, but because you could very much say there's no center to this knowing, there's no center to the mind, there's no center, and it's like a circle that has a center everywhere and a circumference nowhere, but heart center, it's good enough. So having pervaded the heart or mind, having pervaded one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness or loving friendliness, one abides. You just chill out and you can relax your shoulders and if wherever you are, it is just this relaxing, and especially in conversation, just as we were saying in the meditation, paying attention to these orbicularis oculi, these muscles around the eyes, because so much, you won't even notice that you're attaching to a particular idea or view or conceit that person doesn't know what they're talking about, or I'm right and they're wrong. This is right and everything else is wrong. And that's what's going on deep in the chatter, but the eyes have already started to clamp shut. And I could see it sometimes when I'm, you know, talking Buddhism. I haven't tried to talk Buddhism very much with my family in about 10 years or so, because they just don't like it. It's like you can see the veils, the windows of their, it's more than the veils, it's the whole window just shuts. You start talking Buddhism and it's like, and yeah, there's no more opening. So we can relax the eyes and relax our whole being. This word paritva, parati, puto, it comes up in this sutta. It also comes up in the description of the different similes for the jhanas, the meditative absorptions. So when the Buddha talks about the first jhana, it's as if a bathman or a bathman's apprentice, so we don't usually have bathhouses these days, but like a sauna or a sauna person apprentice, it's like they take a bath ball, so like a ball of bath powder, and they knead water into it. They drench, steep, fill, and pervade that ball just enough so it's not oozing, but it's just totally filled with water. That word there for drenching and pervading the ball is parati, puto. So that's the simile for the first jhana. So we're making the whole body mudu. We're making the whole body soft. This is a characteristic that Abhidhamma says is involved in any wholesome mind state. There's an aspect of both softness, mudu, and kamaniya, workability. There's this level of workability. It's like the inner Play-Doh is like, it's not all crunchy and, you know, when you would get your Play-Doh and it was all like crunchy. It's not like that. It's all totally, totally soft. And so it's there in that first jhana simile. It's there in the second jhana simile. So these meditative absorptions, deep samadhi, just as if there were a lotus pond. Is that the second or third jhana? Second, third, okay. So just as a big pond of water who had a fountain coming up from the bottom. Yeah, so yeah, the second jhana, just as if there was a pond and it had a inflow from the bottom, a stream coming up, and there were no inlets from streams on any side, and it wouldn't be rained upon. It just got this cool stream coming up from the bottom. So too, one drenches, steeps, fills, and pervades the mind with this sense of rapture and pleasure, this sense of kind joy or soft friendliness, joy and happiness, sukha. The third jhana, just as three different color lotuses, green or blue or yellow, floating submerged in water, totally submerged with all of their roots and all of their leaves fully submerged, so too one abides in this deep meditative absorption. And what you see in all these beautiful similes using the same word of pervading is it's not that we're shooting the water, we're not shooting the metta out at anybody. If anything, it's the water's coming from outside, or once the water has come in, this namjai, this is a beautiful Pali word, or Thai word, it literally means the waters of the heart, and it means generosity, but it's just a great simile, and we just bring these waters of the heart in an instant, yeah, just pervading, and whether that happens from out to end, in, or in to out, or both inside to outside to inside, it can happen every way, and see about that phrase, which I didn't make up, of explore. Is the mind inside of the head, or is the head inside of the mind? Is the heart inside of the body, or is the body inside of the heart? And looking at that, you might say, are you trying to say that I'm not making any kind of ontological claim about the nature of reality that mind is in body or body. Just feel it. Just feel the question. How limited or how expansive can the mind be? How limited or how expansive can the mind be? Right now, okay, my body stops here. I can't see it, but reportedly, probably all of you can. All of you are in my awareness. I can feel above my head. I can feel metta for Matt. I can feel metta for my mom. She's not here right now. Mom, if you're ever in Seattle, stop on by. It's not totally Buddhist all the time here. So, our metta, our minds are bigger than the body. Or just put that question to yourself. And yeah, feeling your face, feeling your body, and what does your metta feel like? Is it kiki or is it boba? Can you soften into things? Are you feeling a little bit edgy and a little bit pointed? Or your arguments, or the next thing that you want to say to your friend, or your wife, or your husband, or your child, is it pointed? Do you have ready the next thing that you're gonna, you know, knock them out with, or is there more circularity and more spaciousness and roundness to it? So the moral of today's Dhamma talk, and I'll put it up, I've got it written down, not spontaneous, but if you're feeling a little bit kiki, let your metta be boba. We'll leave that up here too. And that's the end of the talk.
Handa mayam dhammakataya sadhu karam dhammase sadhu 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 anumodami.
Okay. So we got time for about 10 minutes of questions. If people on Zoom, if you have a question, you can raise your cartoon hand. And if you have a question here, you can raise your real hand. And we've got a mic runner to bring a mic to you so everyone can hear. And I can't see your name, but on Zoom. Gudas, please.
Second, Gudas. Also, if people need to stand and move around, you can. Gudas, you should be able to speak now. Way to go. I think you're still muted, though.
Yes, now it
is. Oh, we can hear you now. Go for it.
Now it is allowing to unmute Bande. Last time also I thought to speak, but the time was less. Even the last time Dhamma talk was also excellent. And I am seeing the Clear Mountain Monastery is growing day by day. It indicates the Dhamma is growing. May this Dhamma propagate in everyone's life and may all beings be happy. Thanking you, Bhante.
I think we can get 3 sadhus for that. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Gudis, where are you, by the way?
I am from India, nearby Hyderabad city.
Okay, it's great to have you join us. Thank you.
Yes, I'm happy to join this monastery's Zoom meeting.
That was a good lead-in, so we have time for questions in the afterglow.
I thank you for the talk. I feel like with the reordering of the verbs when you were talking about the Pali, I feel like that's a pretty significant paradigm shift, at least for me and in my experience of, I guess, how I'd taken that before. Would you say that, would one be able to make a broad stroke of for other places in English translations where it seems like this kind of active, like, kind of, like from this active to this kind of like, I guess, passive to, would you say generally one could kind of take that approach? Or do you think that could be the case in cultivation?
I think it depends on the context. There are definitely places where the Buddha does say that there is a place for being quite active. He says if certain types of thoughts come up of like ill will or cruelty, of like hyper sensuality, of sensuality come up, that there is a place for really cutting those off rather actively, depending on how dangerous the implications of an action resulting from that might be. But in general, it's good to experiment with because underlying the question, there is passive, there is active voice in Pali. In Pali, there's always the underlying assumption of not self. So whether it's active voice, first person, I will abide, or passive voice, there is the abiding, third person, passive. Even if it's first person, passive, or first person, active, there's still not self. So experimenting with the language for yourself. And for me, I also find it a big paradigm shift to shift those around and to play around with the active. Because honestly, we're so active and we're so control-y, many of us. Certainly, I can speak for myself, like trying to control the world around me, trying to control my own mind. And there is a huge opening in space for practices where you don't do that, where you really do allow for a listening approach versus a broadcasting approach. Thanks, Trent.
Hi, I want to say thank you for the talk. And maybe just to share a reflection on it and just ask for any feedback. I think my first experience with metta was very directed at a very difficult family situation, and I used it just putting a lot of effort into it, and it was good because it took the focus away from myself. So that was my. But recently, this talk articulated something that's come in me, which is less effortful, and my mental image is of like water going through a paper towel. It kind of goes by itself, and it's been nice to be able to kind of rest and have kind of as many or more units of metta with less effort. So.
Units of metta per unit of effort. That's awesome. I love that. Great simile. Just like water inches its way by itself through paper. That's quite beautiful. Yeah, thanks.
It's a very kiki analogy. Units of effort. I will say that, like, one of the... I really appreciate Ajahn Kobilo bringing to mind, like, the metta moving in almost, and that sense of pervading. And I think the place you're pointing to is really important too. And metta's very, it's tricky because there is really a drive to, like, you know, shoot the metta out of your eyes, kind of, you know. And often there's this humility with the Four Noble Truths of just often the right place for metta is yourself. Like, so often when we're angry, you want to spread metta to the person you're averse towards. And very often, the correct orientation of metta is just the sense of, like, it really hurts to be angry. This really is painful. And just that sense of, it's a much more humble, less active approach, but often we, like, skip over or jump over the one place that really needs that metta. And it's, so I really appreciate that sense of gentling you talked about.
Tell me your name again. Brandon, thank you. Sorry.
All right. Hello? Okay. So about like 7 or 8 weeks ago, went to a restaurant, and I was just like super bored. And the hostess asked me, how are you? And I lied. I said I was good. And, you know, that made me, you know, kind of think back about this one sutta about if you lie, you know, your spiritual progress has kind of been depleted or whatever. And I was just wondering, how does one, like, completely eradicate just speaking untruths? Because my solution to that, in retrospect, was instead of answering good, I could have said, like, you know, I'm grateful that I have two fully functioning legs or something, you know? Something, like, honest, genuine, sincere. And I was just wondering, like, because in that moment, I just felt bad after I said good when I wasn't. And I was just wondering, like, how does one completely, like, just remove, like, this, you know, this lying psyche out of my mind? Thank you.
Yeah, you can do it all at once and gradually. So it's like any time that the opportunity comes up to lie, you can just not do it, and that's a victory. And just getting into the habit, that's how you do it. And reflecting back, thinking back about that sense of, oh, that didn't feel good to lie, and also a strategy of what you might say next time. And that leaning into gratitude, that's such a great solution, because hopefully, like, no matter however we feel, there are things that we can be grateful for. So answering in that way, I think, is a really skillful solution. And it just, yeah, not lying is a habit that comes over time. And we do confess it. It's the first one of the confession rules of 92 rules that involve confession for a monk. It's the first one. So if you tell an intentional lie, there is a non-offense clause if you just speak quickly. So this one, you know, it's kind of on the border. Like, it was just, it's a habit. Like, it's what you do in America. Somebody asks you how you are, and you're like, I'm cool. I'm cool. Okay? But yeah, you know, just when you start to realize and value truth, then you don't want to do that anymore. So yeah, not beating yourself up at all, but thinking of skillful means to kind of create the better habit, because you do, the more you tell the truth, then the more you'll create a society around you of people that tell truth, the truth, and you just look around one day and everybody around you is just beautiful. Yeah. And even if they're not beautiful, you know, we can still be kind.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing this up. And the sutta you're referencing of one being devoid of spiritual merit if they lie, it's the Buddha with his son, Rahula, and he says, one who feels no shame in telling an intentional lie is devoid of kind of, you know,
that's the issue, no shame. Because, yeah, it's a practice, and these are, the five precepts are training rules, training grounds. We're training ourselves with them, and we're going to slip up. And that's just part of the thing, is like messing up and then refining. And this is a very small mess up, but it is, you know, the word is kusala, which means skillfulness. And learning how to hold the precepts is an applied skill. Like, how do you answer that question? How are you? The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One, apparent here and now. Great. How are you? The five khandhas are arising and falling. You know, I've heard all those. Or I'm okay, you know, I'm grateful. And so it takes a certain, you know, it's, you do want to prepare for certain questions. And to hold this well, when you approach a difficult conversation where you know you shouldn't be completely, say everything on your mind, you will have to kind of prepare, like, how am I going to respond to this question in a way that won't cause damage, but will keep my sila. But if you can keep that honesty, it will change your life. I mean, it is, we were interviewing Gil Fronsdale, and he talked about going to a commune, and they'd had to give up their sacrament of LSD because they kept getting arrested, and they were looking for a sacrament as powerful for their commune of 700 people as LSD. And the thing they came up with was honesty, and just holding that with utmost integrity. And I've seen it in this community, like, people take on that fourth precept of not lying, and their whole life suddenly shifts, and vast changes happen. But it takes guts too. So, yeah, anumotana for that. And yeah, that's a pretty minor one, so I wouldn't worry too much. But yeah. So we'll actually have to wrap up a little early today because we have a special kind of premiere. So Jen, would you mind coming up, and we'll get a seat for you, and maybe we could pull this camera back to get her in frame. If you're joining on YouTube, we're going to be moving to Zoom for this and stopping the YouTube live stream for this video premiere. So if you're joining on YouTube, you'll find a link to the Zoom maybe in the chat and in the description. And so either you'll see this video go public on the channel on Tuesday, so you're welcome to see it then. But if you want the sneak preview, then just jump on Zoom right now, and you'll be able to watch there. But otherwise, goodbye, YouTubers. See you soon. And see, Joseph, you're still on Zoom, so we get you with the heart. So that's good. So basically, we can do the blessing braid at the end, yeah? Yeah. Or do you think no? Or... let's do it. Yeah, we'll actually do some of the other stuff first. So, Jen, you're cool sitting there for a second? Okay. So, first of all, we'll just quickly do the chanting request. So, Cheryl, would you read out those who have listed their names for today? These are people we can just hold in our hearts for the moment.
Give me one second here. I got to open the page. Plus, I have lots of things set up in here. Chanting press. There we go. Okay. Sally Cantu for a positive rebirth passed away today 6 years ago. Sherry Garman passed on this week over 10 years ago. Spread love for safe passage and the peace of her family. To all beings, including devas and nagas, wishing all happiness and peace. Jen with cancer, spread metta for healing and letting go. Swarnalatha, got heart blockages, got stunts, spread happiness, wishing for sooner recovery. Arjun Ladway, got hand surgery, second time, spread happiness and peace. Guda Suresh, Sunita Savankumar, Sneha Samvega Sindhu, spread happiness and peace. Marilyn, for ease and well-being, admitted to hospital yesterday for stroke assessment.
Do others have some names they'd like to bring to mind for the moment? Ed died of pancreatic cancer. That's great. Maggie undergoing chemo.